Okay. Okay, huh?
Yes.
Talking manuscripts, I did buy an odd volume of Joseph Black's chemical lectures. I think it was 1779. Just an odd volume, all handwritten. But we don't know who wrote it. Then finally, not more than about 3 years ago, I was offered a complete set. And the dealer says it's undated, but it's complete, of his complete chemical lectures at Edinburgh I found a date. But when you go through that, six volumes, all beautifully handwritten, and it came from a library of a manuscript collector of the early 19th century who lived on the island Anglesey off Wales, northwest Wales. And anyway, as I was leaping through the thing, I looked into references to oxygen and things like that, there were no references to oxygen. I finally found one of the lectures towards the end of, I think, the third or fourth volume. It said, December, I'm not quoting the exact number, but December the 5th, 1773. Oxygen was a year later. Now this must have been just a lecture, just that he was leading up to his discovery of oxygen. So I consider that a rather significant set. But it's delightful to find things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another thing went from Gurney. He often said, you might be interested in this, Roy. He said, I've got a prospectus announcing the publication of Dalton's new system of chemical philosophy. it's just a little single sheet, and it's bound with, or it's together with, a letter written to Dr. John Bostock of Liverpool, signed beautifully by John Dalton. And then there's a longer letter that Bostock must have received this letter in 1808. I think it was sometime in June of 1808, like June the 8th, I think, something like that, 1808. I was saying that I think you might find this of interest, Dr. Bostock, who was sort of like a physician chemist at the time. And he did a lot of work in early physics and freezing matrix and things like that. Anyway, he must have gone over to Liverpool. About 10 days later, obviously, Bostock replied to Dalton, and then Dalton sent a copy of the first volume of his three-volume set, accompanying together with a letter saying, I think that you can hardly withhold your assent that my theory of atoms, you can hardly hold your assent. Have you seen that letter?
No.
Go to CHF, you will find that original letter. So I thought this was so important, I better just publish this thing in ambics. Now ambics at the time didn't want to publish much after about 1750 or so. But apparently they thought it was important enough, they stretched a point and went up to 1808. And I even had a photograph made of that, because Gurney said that's probably unique. And as far as I know, that is the only known copy. It's just a perspective. I think it's pretty dark. That's the one I believe. Yeah, that's it. There you go. That's the one. Put my glass up to read. That's it. Unrecorded Daltoniana. 1808. Right. That's right. When did this come out?
The first page has the date on it.
Yeah, it's February 1960. Well, what do we know? That's 45 years ago. Good Lord, this old brain box is still working, I guess, but that's a long way to reach back. But yeah, there it is. There's a picture of the prospectus. A unique. There it is.
It's fascinating.
Oh, and another thing I bought, again from Jeremy Norman, was a copy of an 1827, it was Dalton's last lecture on atomic symbols.
Hmm.
And there's apparently two variants of that. It varies in the ornamentation at the top of the page. And let me see, Simon Finch had a dilapidated, worn out copy, torn it all the way around and creases and totally generally rotten copy. But I knew that there was two, because I actually, he reproduced it in the catalogue, and I prepared that with my, you know, and Dalton. And they're obviously different, although the typeface is the same, but the ornamentation is a little different. So he must have had two strikes of that. Although why he would do that for just a lecture, just to hang around, I don't know. I just don't know. Unless it was, this is a pure hypothesis, unless it was considered by people at the lecture that these little symbols were so important, maybe he should run off again for people who were not at the lecture. I don't know. But anyway, yes, I wrote this out in Ambix, which I thought was worth doing. I reproduced the text of the whole letter. It says here, I hope you will not be altogether disappointed in my book. You will find several things in it that have not been published before. When you see how happily the atomic system in this sequel, which is part two of volume one, will accommodate itself to the neutral salts, the oxides, etc., I think you can hardly withhold your assent. Marvelous. But anyway, I thought that was worthwhile. Thank you, Dan, for...
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just in case that copy, I know it hasn't got destroyed. I'm hoping they never will get. Not with CHF, but... I sent them over to be bound by Sangorski and Sutcliffe. They deal with Buckingham Palace Library and things like that, you know, so I thought, that cost me almost as much, or probably about as much, to get bound by those people as I paid for the originals. The original stuff was £40, the prospectus and the first letter was £40, and for the other letter was £40. So there's a total of 80, plus about another £80 to get them bound.
When did you reach the decision that you wanted to part with the collection?
Oh dear, that was an agonizing decision. I realized I was getting older and I was beginning to get these heart pains and so on. I thought, well, I don't want this library to be broken up. Several dealers have told me and several book collectors have come to see the library and I said, this is far too important to break up. It would be a crime to break it up. And I think it would be. Not the kind of crime you go to jail for, but I mean, a scholarly crime. So, and I thought, well, I'm going to go one these days, so I wanted to stay together. So I approached several dealers, and they gave me various estimates. Some of them said it was worth about 5 million, some of them said 5 or 6, some of them said 4, and then we're all over the map, depending on what they would think it was worth. So, I mean, it was just their opinions. So, finally I found a dealer. He was a man called Bennett Gilbert down in Los Angeles. He came up to see this library and he tried very, very hard to sell it to Stanford. And I thought, well, that's nice. I live in River City, about 7 miles away from Stanford. I'm going to go down and visit and so on. Anyway, he tried very, very hard with Stanford. And Stanford had bought the Bartus Library, which has never been a lot of high spots, not a research library at all. It's got all the, you know, the Principia's and the Wazir's and things like that. But you can't do research in it. I mean, as soon as you dive in, you're at the bottom and there's no place to go. It's like what I call a once-over-likely high spots. Not an in-depth thing. You can do research in my library. So we met with the head of the library at Stanford. He laid on this beautiful lunch of prawns and things like that, you know, and the head librarian that was there, and the special collection librarians were there. And there were a total of about 3 or 4 of them, weren't they, Jenny?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, and then, so we discussed it, and so on. He said, well, how much do you want for this library? So I thought, well, I don't know. And so I thought, well, I think it's worth at least $6 million. He said, well, I think it's worth $6 million, yeah. Oh, hey, great, marvelous. So I said, well, are you prepared to go forward? He said, well, I'm quoting now, actually, the truth. He said, I can write your check right now for $1 million. But he said, the problem is the other $5 million. Uh-oh, well. I said, well, how good is that, you know? So anyway, we negotiated for a little while. I could see that they were basically dancing around the whole subject. They wanted me basically to give it to them. They give me $1 million, and but I spent much more than that on it. So much, much, much more than that on it. I mean, you know, it's all very well getting your name on a plaque, but what am I going to retire on? And this is our life savings. So I thought, well, I better find another library. So we cast around, and Bennett worked with me for about 3 years. Tried this one, and we tried University of Cambridge. I've got a good friend over at the University of Cambridge, Peter Waters, and he told me, he said, it's pathetic what they've got. Just nothing there. Lots of minor 17th century plays that nobody ever bothers to look at anymore. Little itty bitty poetry books, and just nothing. But no science to speak of. Of course, they got Newton, Principia, and all the big stuff, but I mean, in depth, they didn't even have the first that was here, 1789. I mean, yeah, pathetic. So I think they had about the fourth edition or something like that. Anyway, so he talked to the head librarian there how much will we be willing to go? Oh, we could spend on about £1 million. I forget that, here we go again. Always pleading poverty, I contacted Southampton University, got a nice letter back, and said, it's hopelessly beyond us. The universities over here are just crying and pleading for money. They're closing departments of chemistry and so on. You've probably heard about that. And then I got a book dealer Daniel McDowell. He said, oh, forget about the English University, the Scottish University, but Ireland is really booming. So there's a new university at Limerick. It's been founded by a fellow called Walsh. What was his first name? Mm-hmm. Tell me, I can't remember. Oh, I can't think, I'm going to say James Walsh or something like that. But anyway, somebody Walsh, Dr. Walsh, and he apparently was a wonderful engineer, and he had patents, and he was worth millions over in Ireland. And he decided 20 years ago to found this new library in Limerick. And he was in the process of, you know, buying things and establishing things. So he came, he and his wife pulled up in front of our house in this big stretching along, you know, and we gave him this show of the library, and he came with a comptroller and so on. I thought, this looks pretty good. And we gave him a lovely lunch and so on, talked about it, and yes, it looked like a go situation. But there again, $5 million, so that wouldn't work, they couldn't raise that. And I mean, I can understand, they're still building, and it's much more important to build buildings, you know, rather than sequester this library of old chemistry books. And I understood that. So then there was, I think it was Lismore Castle or something like that. Do you remember that? The Earl of Lismore? I think it was Lismore. Was contacted because he was trying to establish a science library there, and this might fit well. He couldn't afford it. So anyway, after about 4 years of doing around, on again, off again, the whole thing foundered. So the next thing we know is, well, Bennett was trying all the way along here to interest various universities and libraries in general in the United States. And then my book dealer friend over in New York said, oh, the University of Stuttgart might be interested. So I thought, oh, maybe so. I'm not averse to taking Marx as long as there's another one. So anyway, they were contacted, and then we were all diddling around with them, and eventually they couldn't afford it either, and so I thought, well, I'm basically stuck. So finally, Bennett came up with the idea, what about the Linda Hall Library? in Kansas City, Missouri. So I knew about Linda Hall. I had some books sort of highlighting their acquisitions and what their holdings. So I thought, well, I'd better do that. So a fellow came out. His name was Lee Jones. Do you know Lee Jones?
No.
What a dapper little guy, you know. Always talking about his airplane just bought and things like that. And it was run by, the library was founded, I think, in 1946, by some lumber barons or something like that. And they were well connected with a multi-billionaire called, was it Sutherland or Sunderland? Or Sutherland, I believe it was. Oh, anyway, they had a little write-up, and they were sitting around a table having a nice lunch and so on. So I read it while they were all chatting away, and so give me a few minutes, read these three or four pages. What it boiled down to, they were willing to pay $500 right up front, but the fine print is what turned me off. I was supposed to get $500,000 money and then redonate the $4.5 million back to Glenda Hall. I remember just blurting out, I said, I've read this twice. I said, what's in it for Paul O'Reilly? This is my life, this is our life work, life savings. So he said, well, would you feel honored to give us this library? I said, we'll put a nice plaque up. And I said, well, you can't buy groceries with a plaque. Anyway, so I said, look, if you're interested in buying this library, I want some hard cash, much more on this. So I got a little bit miffed about that whole thing. I'd come into my house, sit down, eat my food, and insult me. So I got a little bit, my back was up about that. So anyway, he said, well, let me go back and talk and see what we can come up with, money-wise. So a month or two went by, and he came back, and he said, well, we're prepared to offer you, I think it was $6 million, something like that. Now, at that time, we were still sort of talking to Stanford. Things were overlapping, please understand. So I didn't know whether I was going to get $6 million with a struggle out of Stanford, or $6 million with a struggle out of Linda Hall, or the whole thing was going to blow up. I had no idea. So I thought, well, we still had about over $4 million cash from selling Lone Star. You remember that, Jenny?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, look, we've got all that money. It was close to $5 million. So I'm not going to be, diddled down by these people and end up being, taking in the shorts, as my brother likes to say, getting in the shorts. So I said, well, I really don't need the money, and I'm not about to donate my life savings to any place, so you've got to pay a reasonably fair offer. So anyway, he went back again. He came back a month or two later, and he said, I'll give you $7 million. So I thought, well, he said, we'll go higher than the $5 million. What do you want? Oh, wow. So just like that, I brought up $7 million. I thought, oh, you poor, why didn't you say $7.5 million? But anyway, I would have made a profit, but not that much. But I tell you, you've got to figure in the IRS. If I had a sort of a baptism on fire for selling this, my share of the cell phone, I mean, those guys are just brutal, for the money. So, I thought, well, okay, so, and he called up, and when he said $5 million, and I said $7 million, he called up the Sutherland, the billionaire, and I could hear Sutherland say, do it, like that. He wants $7 million. So he said, do it. I thought, well, I just made $2 million to try, I think what. So I thought, this guy's obviously going to go much higher than that. Well, so we waited, and we sort of said, well, okay, $7 million. So he was dealing through this deal in Southern California, and the dealer said, I think we got to go here. So this was like about October, and he called Bennett, and Bennett said, he's told me that he intends to cut a substantial check. It's a exact quote, a substantial check by next January for the Nevilles. So, well, great, money's coming all over but the shouting. You know, we can sign documents and so on and run away. So January comes and goes, February comes and goes, March comes and goes, and I was tweeting this guy down there, and when's this guy going to do something? Finally, he said, I don't know, I'll keep after him, and kept asking me to go out of town on the moon or someplace, but anyway, he wasn't there. I think it was either dodging us or something was happening, but the net result was nothing happened until about May, I think it was. And then we got this letter from the Linda Hall Library. I opened it twice, but well, you know, let's do it. Well, we are withdrawing our offer. And we can't afford it right now. We're on a budget and this and that. And this was, you know, remember the stock market was way down and so on. So I thought,
what year was this?
This was around 2021, something like that.
Okay.
I think, or maybe 21, 22, I can't remember anymore. We're dealing with an old brain here. But anyway, it was right around that period. And so I thought, well, there it goes. So anyway, I thought, well, I'm stuck with it. You know, I don't really need the money. I've got about over $4 million with house to pay for, and I'll go and enjoy my book. So I was in the middle of one operation after another during that period. And every time I went in the operating theater, I thought, oh, gosh, poor Gene, if I die, he's stuck with all those books. He's not going to get, some dealer's going to come around and just say, well, I'll give you a couple hundred thousand of the lot. And there goes our savings. So anyway, I thought, I've just got to survive. I've just got to do something. Anyway, so I thought one afternoon, I remember sitting at my desk down there in the basement, and I thought, why don't I give CHF a call? I know that everybody's breathing poverty. So the person on the switchboard answered, and I just explained why I was calling, and she said, I think you'd like to talk to Miss Elizabeth Swan,
I think. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so she got Elizabeth Swan on a phone, and I described, you know, I had this beautiful library, probably about the biggest library of private hands in the world in early chemistry. I've been collecting for about 58 years or so. And it was really quite unique, and you might possibly be interested in acquiring it. You know, all very tentative. So she said, yes, I'd like to talk to Dr. Packray about that. So I said, oh, you mean Arnold? Oh, yes, yes. I said, well, I know Arnold. He came to see my library back in 1984 and was very impressed with that. So anyway, Arnold got in touch with me, and he came on out and saw it. And of course, by that time, it was just about double since 1984. And plus, all these much more important, high-cost, extremely rare, wonderful books. I couldn't possibly touch those in what he had purchased in the library. So everything was sort of magnified about almost tenfold in terms of value. So he said, Roy, he said, we can't raise more than $4.5 million. So I said, well, that's going to have to go to Linda Hall. But I didn't tell him at the time that they said no, but on the other hand, I thought they might resuscitate. So anyway, what happened? It's funny. Right about the time Arnold got sincerely interested, he was starting to talk to his board and all that, suddenly I got this nice letter saying, oh, by the way, our finances at Linda Hall have suddenly improved. I thought, there's that billionaire in the background. And we're coming out, and by golly, we can offer you more money. So he comes out and he offers me a little bit more money. I think he offered me about $8 million. So anyway, I told Arnold, said he might be able to raise a bit more than the $4.5 million, and he came up to about $6 million, and so it was kind of like playing catch-up all the time. And I told Lee Jones, by then I particularly didn't like the man. I mean, I was civil to him, but I thought, boy, it's much nicer to have, it makes more sense for this early chemical library to go to a Chemical Heritage Foundation. It's a logical place. And also, Lee Jones said, well, what we'll do with your library, Roy, is we'll sort through it, and any duplicates we'll compare with what our copy is, your copy, and if yours is not so good as ours, it'll go on the market.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, that's going to be broken up. And I thought, oh, this is no good. And also it became like a small duck in a big pond, as opposed to being a big duck in a smaller pond. And I'd rather go for the other one. And so I was basically kind of like, and he showed me a sort of diagram where it would go. It was going to go in the basement, where it would be basically forgotten. And I thought, I said, are you in Tornado Alley? Oh, no, no, no. Well, apparently they're right in the middle of Tornado Alley. I thought, well, that's all I need, a tornado and a rainstorm. Anyway, so there was lots of back and forth and back and forth. And Arnold was sitting on the couch there in the basement there, surrounded by all these beautiful books. And I was always referring to Linda Hall as the other library. I said, you've got a competitor. He said, well, I don't want that. And I also told the other library, i.e. Linda Hall, that they got a competitor. He said, well, I'm not interested in competing with anybody. I said, well, whether you are or not, you've got one. And he said, why did you do that? I said, because you turned me down. I thought that was a standard Dear John. I'm so used as a chemist to getting Dear John, that I thought it was a polite way of saying no. He said, oh, no, no, he didn't mean that at all. But what he really meant was, he wanted us to basically give it to him.